This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman. Today's program was pre-recorded, so we're not able to include your phone calls. Clyburn Park, a play set in two acts set in a segregated neighborhood 50 years apart in 1959 and 2009, explores the fault line between race and property. Its performance at Playhouse in the Park is being used to launch a community discussion about diversity and acceptance in Cincinnati. Marianne Zalesnik recently had the chance to talk about the play with Clyburn Park director Timothy Douglas, Catherine Gurdett, president of the Walnut Hills Redevelopment Foundation, and University of Cincinnati Department of Sociology associate professor Jeffrey Timberlake.
Well, good afternoon. Thanks so much for being here today. I think a really good place to start our discussion is just to find out a little bit about what this play is all about. And Timothy, I think I'm going to start with you. Tell us what Clyburn Park is.
The author Bruce Norris riffs on one of the final scenes from Lorraine Hansberry, A Raisin in the Sun, where a black family has determined their commitment to moving into what is, in 1959, an all-white suburban neighborhood in Chicago. The play begins with a community of white suburbanites discussing the fact that this family's moving in, and they feel very threatened for specific reasons. The play, as all good theater, puts a human face on that kind of blind fear of the unknown. So the first act takes place in 1959 in a white suburbia. Second act takes place in 2009 after the economic decline and challenges of that neighborhood. And that face has turned all African American. And Act Two begins with a white family beginning to make their plans to move into this neighborhood. And I think I'll just leave it at that for now.
For now. We'll discuss more as we go. As a sociology professor, Jeff, tell us what your take is on all of this.
Well, I haven't read the play yet, but the idea is fascinating. And I think it's representative of a very common experience of, frankly, both white and African-American families for the last 50 years, the idea of neighborhoods changing rapidly around people and them having to understand how to cope with this, how to make sense of the change in their neighborhoods and the change in the people that make up their neighborhoods. So I'm excited to see the play. I'm seeing it on February 1st, and I think from everything I read about it, it really sounds true to the experience of an awful lot of people that that live this, in their daily lives.
Catherine?
My family in 1944 created White Flight on Ruth Avenue here in Cincinnati. Hmm. And I live in Walnut Hills, which is a community that has had 50% of its residents decline in the last few decades. And we're at the cusp of how do we repopulate our community with services that provide for the community that moved in the 60s and 70s, that was even there in the 1800s, as we know, with Lane Seminary. But how do we welcome newcomers to our community? So it's an interesting place for me.
Now, when the Playhouse decided to do the show, you're doing more than just putting on a performance. You're really trying to engage the community. How did that all come about?
It's forward thinking, and Blake Robison, artistic director, understands the need with a play like this for community dialogue, and we're providing that opportunity. We benefit from the history of previous productions at other theaters and how igniting the conversation can be for audiences. So that was the inspiration for that. When the subject of race, specifically between blacks and whites in America, come up, it gets so murky so quickly in terms of use of language and points of view, and defensiveness creeps in. I experience that with myself all the time. And the play is so beautifully constructed that it really allows for the opportunity to get a little further down that road before it gets heated. And so we just provide them that opportunity. And again, all compelling theater really does that.
You say the play is beautifully constructed. What does that mean?
It means, it's such a hot button issue that we're talking about. I'm on the receiving end of it in my neighborhood in Fort Greene section of Brooklyn. All my life, I grew up going to visit my aunt and uncle who bought this house in the mid-60s, and I had the blessing of inheriting it. And in the space of 5 years, I'm now the only black family on our block. And I am looked at with great suspicion. You know, I can't afford to live in my neighborhood anymore. I benefited from the inheritance. And I'm all about progress and change and progressive change. But I I, at the moment, carry the history of the neighborhood, and my new neighbors don't seem interested at all, so it's very prickly. But anyway, the play allows a window into the individuals, both whites and blacks. What really is inspiring this fear of unknown, fear of other? And it's important to have that kind of space and articulation around it, because the audience, depending on where they sit with their perceptions and concerns and frustrations and fear about race, they bring so much to it. There's a conversation going on in their head while the play is going on. So the play and I, the cast, need to leave enough space to receive the play in dialogue with the conversation that's going on in their head.
Does that mean that you put in longer pauses than you might ordinarily? I mean, what do you mean leave enough space?
I am not interested. It would be very easy to allow scapegoats in certain characters in this play. And we are committed to making sure each individual is as completely rounded as possible. It is important that the audience understands their motivation. Don't have to agree, but we have to understand that they are individuals at the core of that. The truer and authentic we are with that, the more the audience has to actually deal with their own issues around race. If I take a stand on a particular character one way or the other, I influence the audience. I don't allow the experience of the individual in that audience to wrestle with what their concerns and ideas of progression actually are.
Jeff, what do you think people will think as, and I know you haven't read the play yet, but the idea there, what do you think people are going to think about? Where do people in today's society really stand on race in terms of where people live?
Well, I mean, in general, I think, you'll find most people believe themselves to be far less racist than they believe everyone else is. And so I thought it was an interesting point Timothy made about making sure that there are no obvious bad guys, in the play, or even perhaps obvious good guys, I don't know.
Yes.
so that, people won't be able to just say, well, I'm not like that guy. I'm not as bad as that. I'm fine. And I think that a lot of particularly white Americans find that it's easy to explain racial inequality in terms of somebody else's fault, and as opposed to thinking about how they might be contributing to the issue. And in particular, in the subject of housing, it's all well and good to say that you're a completely non-racist person, but if you live in an all-white neighborhood and send your kids to all-white schools and shop in all-white businesses and go to all-white churches, I mean, what are you really contributing to a sort of interracial dialogue? And so I hope that, and it sounds like the play is going to, provide an excellent opportunity for people to think about how they fit into this whole picture.
One of the compelling things about the play is it's also looking at issues of gender and of class and of economics and politics on par with its concerns about race relations between blacks and whites. But I see over and over again, because we have so little comprehensive dialogue about an agreement of why whites and blacks are still so conflicted. We don't have an understanding on par, say, with the Jewish Holocaust. That's why this conversation breaks down so quickly. But this play is actually about so many other things. But boy, that's where everybody wants to go. And so for myself as director and for the cast, that's another reason why it's so important that we focus on the individuals. And so the murkiness of this perspective or lack of about race, again, the audience can have the dialogue with themselves while the play is going on.
Well, in the community of Walnut Hills, we have been having this conversation about inclusion. We say that we are a diverse neighborhood, and it's very true. Historically, you can look at the demographics of Walnut Hills, and we've been a diverse neighborhood since the 1800s. But are we an inclusive neighborhood within how we are? If you go street by street, block by block, are we an inclusive community? And we've started to have that conversation with intention as we move forward. And in addition, we had our Walnut Hills Area Council meeting, and as a council, we decided that we are going to go as a group to see this play and have this conversation, not only on the day that we gather, but to really have that conversation, because that is where change happens when you develop a relationship with someone. You may not be perceived to be in the same class. You may not be of the same color. But when you talk to a person, we are people doing the best that we can where we are with what we have.
Yes.
Now, some people would say that it's a matter of comfort and convenience. People tend to live with people that are like them in a neighborhood where they grew up, and that integration isn't as likely to happen. Does the play address that at all? I mean, the whole comfortableness of what people feel as opposed to necessarily worrying, maybe worrying is the wrong word, but giving consideration to whether or not it is inclusive.
It definitely addresses that, but from the perspective of wanting to protect what is known, and that the unfamiliarity with the change that is coming is what triggers the blind fear. But as far as I can tell, this play is talking about protecting what has gone before, a sense of history.
There's something I have to bring up, and for those of us from Cincinnati, maybe a more direct connection, but the one character's name is Carl Lindner, which of course is the name of now deceased but very prominent Cincinnatian. I assume there's no, well, as you say, then I just had to ask it. There's no connection there.
Well, I mean, Carl Lindner is the white character in Lorraine Hansberry's play. It was written in the late 50s. I don't know if if Carl Lindner was a presence nationally then, and if she knew about that. I don't know. I'll look that up.
It's different spelling of Carl, but I felt when I read it, it just sort of stood out to me. So
yeah, I noticed that too.
Yeah,
I bring that up just to find out.
It's another connection of the play to the city.
Great.
Talk about the play that it's coming from, and how was it Raisin in the Sun, and then what is with Clybourne Park, and how they're different and how they're related in the time frame, and what you expect will come from Clybourne Park that maybe did or did not come from Raisin in the Sun being produced in a different time.
Was that me?
Sure.
Well, I'm woefully ignorant of the specifics of Cincinnati's history, so I can't speak directly to that. Raisin in the Sun focused directly on an African-American family living in challenging times in the south side of Chicago in the 50s, and it really is a drama about that family, the coming of age of a black man defining who he is as an American. And the matriarch of that family sees her family falling apart, and from the benefit of an insurance check from the death of her husband, she just steps out and she decides to create an environment where her husband can thrive and also family and future generations. Happens to be in a white neighborhood. What's interesting about that play, that's how it ends. And it's a beautiful play, and it's a powerful play, and a beautiful story. But a playwright, Robert O'Hara, who is from Cincinnati, who I've worked with many times, he's written a play in response to Bruce Norris's play called Etiquette of Vigilance. And it also takes place at 406 Clybourne Street in Clybourne Park, which is where Clybourne Park takes place, and that's where the younger family from Raisin in the Sun moved into. And in this play, the young boy, the son of Walter Lee in Raisin in the Sun, he is now 60 years old, still living in this house, and has seen great decline. And the other character is his daughter, Lorraine, who happens to be an aspiring playwright. And he brings the question of what do you think happened when that family moved into that neighborhood? Mm-hmm. So he kind of bridges what happens between Raisin in the Sun and Clybourne Park. I never respond to that question about what I expect audiences to get from plays. It limits. No matter what I say, it will limit what the potential is. I'm interested in what happens after, which is why I'm so grateful that there will be a dialogue after each performance.
Couple of things. First of all, we just got word that there is no connection, apparently, between Carl Lindner and Carl Lindner. So that's just a coincidence. But I think I won't be the only one that wonders if you all did as well. The second, I'd like to talk a little bit about the community forum. And Catherine, maybe you can speak to that a little bit. Where did the idea come from? And what are you hoping to achieve there?
I will say that I've been asked to sit on the forum. So I've not been on the planning end of the forum. But I would say, just from my intuitiveness, that we are, as a city, at a cuspice of having this conversation of what community will be, that we know that there was an exodus out from the core of the city. And as people are getting older and they realize that the benefits of being in a smaller urban community outweigh them being in suburbia, that they're coming back into the community. So how do we have that great dialogue of what's been happening? Because you can't always lift up the rug and put it underneath there, what's been happening in a community. You need to unveil that rug and have the conversations of, yes, people have moved out. What history do we keep? I think of the architectural history of Cincinnati. We think of over the Rhine with its Italian ornate history. Walnut Hills has some of that. Different communities have this great historical building, but they're in shambles. How do you support them? How do you save them? Is there a way to save them? Is there enough money that can be put behind them? Or do we take them down to the ground again and rebuild so it's an inclusive community? And I believe that HOME is having that conversation, or has put this panel together to have that conversation within the confines of our community of Cincinnati.
Yeah, I mean, I would echo that. And I think that what's going on in Cincinnati right now, it seems to me, is this kind of interesting mix of development and loss, in the sense that over the last two decades, Cincinnati has lost about 30,000 people from the city in each decade. So it's a shrinking city in some sense. On the other hand, if you look downtown between the casino on the east side and Washington Park on the west side and the banks on the south side and what's going on over the Rhine, particularly around 12th or 13th Street and Vine Street, the city is rapidly changing in the core. And there's obviously dilemmas about who's being displaced from that kind of development. On the other hand, the thing that I'd be more interested in and concerned about is what's going on in maybe the more outer neighborhoods of the city. So that the population is leaving from somewhere. I mean, we know that there's maybe some repopulation downtown, but if 30,000 people per decade are leaving, they're coming from somewhere, and I'd be concerned that there are many neighborhoods in the city that are really struggling because of that. Now, in terms of the kind of change and what that represents, I think Catherine's right that when you have all this flux, people have to cope with how that's going to unfold in the near term. And so hopefully this dialogue, this HOME dialogue, will be a step in that direction.
I think it's interesting, as you said in your community, that in the home that you inherited, that now you are the only there now, and that could happen in some of our communities that are at the core of our neighborhood. And it is fortuitous for us to be on the front end of that, to say, let's have this dialogue, because there is great history in community. I think of Lane Seminary and Walnut Hills and the Frederick Douglass School and how it played such a part in educating many students in our city, that if you know that history, there needs to be some place to hold that history. It's not that you don't want that building to stay. Like, I think of on McMillan, the original Graders was there, but it was too far gone to save. You know, that's a piece of history, but you don't want that knowledge to go away, right, that it was there. Mm-hmm.
As you're working on the show, and I know you don't want to say what people are going to take away from it because you want to have them have the opportunity to take away whatever they will, but do you anticipate, though, that it will cause people to talk? I mean, not only at this forum, but is it the type of show, and from the experiences that you've heard from others who have done it, that as people leave, there's going to be a lot of talking?
Oh, yes. I've seen other productions of this play, and the common denominator with all those other productions is the audience is majority white. But really need to talk after the production. But being one of the few black people in those audiences, it was remarkable to me that the takeaway was, isn't it great that we can now talk openly about race? And my understanding of this play is the mirror that it shows to us as Americans, how challenging it is to talk about anything remotely uncomfortable, and that the Olympics of that is race relations between blacks and whites. So in all three cases where I was in those audiences, at some point the moderator singles me out in the audience. Well, what do you think? And there's a whole, I mean, there's just, that opens up a lot, but I'll try to focus my thought about that. And I don't mind sharing what I thought, but I had a very different experience than the majority of what was articulated in that audience. And then I speak honestly and I drop this big bomb. And there are some who are able to go, I never thought of that, and reflect for a moment. But far others who then want to challenge me on my perception of what I just experienced sitting right next to them, that if I don't agree, then I must be wrong. And it is remarkable. And so again, dialogue is important, and I'm all about dialogue, but that's no longer a dialogue. You know, I'm either put in a position to defend my point, and I'm not even really answering the question. I'm having to provide all this context before I can even say what I meant, because there's such a lack of understanding of my specific history. My neighborhood in Brooklyn is a case in point. And this is, you know, this is my career, but I can't even be an audience member and not have my perspective challenged. It's privilege. What I've come to understand through this play and through my life experiences are, it was not malice. It is a genuine desire to understand, but the lack of understanding that you not knowing my history, my background, and how I come to this perspective, and the complete dismissal of it. I believe it's unintentional. I don't feel I was attacked, but it's so frustrating. And so as a black man, that's where I break down in these conversations, where it gets defensive. Not that I don't want to have the conversation and be a part of a healing, but it quickly is not a dialogue anymore. I'm put in the position of expert, and then I'm challenged on anything that I say. It's no longer a dialogue.
What's the sociology perspective on that?
Well, one of the things I think that's bringing up, and Timothy mentioned this a few minutes ago, that the 1959 era of the play is actually something that I think most people don't know very much about, particularly in a city like Chicago. It's hard to overstate the tremendously low level of options that African-American families had in those neighborhoods in Chicago. And other Midwestern cities like that. So most people know that there was the so-called Great Migration of rural African Americans from the South to the North, particularly during three decades after World War II. And they found almost no options for housing in those neighborhoods. And so they were incredibly crowded, incredibly dense. And people tried to find a little place where they could have some space, some elbow room. And that created huge amounts of violence from fearful white families, and it created, it was implicated in all kinds of decisions that the federal government made about who could get loans and who couldn't. And so what I'm hearing then is that, you know, African Americans know this history. Their parents and their grandparents know this. They lived it. They deeply feel it. Most white families don't understand that. They just have never experienced it. They don't know that. If you lived, in Bronzeville in Chicago, there was really nowhere else you could live. And so you'd have 10, 12 people in a room, and it was incredibly overcrowded and dangerous conditions, rats everywhere. I mean, it was awful living conditions. And that is the history of African Americans in particularly Midwestern cities in the post-war era. That's not old. That's 30, 40 years old. That's a really recent history. Now, if we think then about the more recent part of Claiborne Park, at least from what I understand, that might be something that most white families can maybe understand a little bit more, that, it's more modern time. People like to believe, particularly after the election of Barack Obama, that we're in this kind of more easy racial climate. But never forget that earlier period is still deeply in the minds of many African Americans. And so what I'm expecting and hoping from the play is that it will allow people to understand both parts of the process. I'm assuming that most African Americans would say, yeah, on balance, it's better in 2009 than it was in 1959, particularly in terms of living conditions in places that were possible for people to live. But A, it doesn't mean it's all the way better, and B, it doesn't mean that history is gone and is not remembered. And so I think that's one of the things I thought was particularly attractive and interesting about the play, is that it tries to show both of these periods and how there were dilemmas in both periods that people felt deeply.
What about in your background, Catherine? You talked about your family integrating a neighborhood. Is that sort of family lore? Does that go down with in history in your family, that people talk about that a lot?
We do. It was very important. I grew up in Evanston, and if you say the community name Evanston today, it has a very different connotation in 2013 than it did in 1944. My mother graduated from Withrow High School in 1953 when she was the minority at that school, and it's now 95% African American. Now, Norwood was right across the railroad tracks. You know, there are the stories, and there is the arrest record from my my uncle being on the wrong side of the railroad tracks when it got dark in Norwood, you know, and it was literally right there on Montgomery Road. You're in Evanston on one second and you're in Norwood in another, and you were not allowed there. So it is, you know, that is part of my family's history that we talk about. We also talk about not just where we live, but the voting rights and how you literally had to make sure that you were picking up people and you were getting them to the voting booth so that, you know, you could exercise that right to vote. And that within my family, I think of now here in the community, there are still family homes that have been owned and passed down in 3-4 generations, because that's a way to keep tentacled in the community and have history of that community. And I will also say that I don't believe that my family is the outside of the norm. I believe that there are many families, be they African American or European descent, that have that generational history in their family homes. I think of in Walnut Hills, we have family names that we call that they literally own the block. You know, the family has literally taken over all the housing on the block and have bought up as it is still, as it comes available. They continue to buy at homes because they want their family around them. So they have their own community within community.
You mentioned something, Timothy, that when you've seen the show before, it was really with all white audiences. Do you anticipate that, or nearly all white audience? Yeah. Do you anticipate that again?
I don't know the theater audience well enough, the subscriber base. I do know that it's primarily white. I also know that traditionally plays of African-American themes do a fairly brisk business in single ticket sales with African-Americans. I mean, we do come out to support. But that's anyone. The idea of theater, we go to experience ourselves and our history on the stage. And, you know, for whatever reasons, economic ones being the primary ones, to keep not-for-profit theaters going, it has to continue to reflect its audience that can afford to support it. So, you know, it really breaks down upon economic lines, which I believe most race issues in this country do. It just happens that the face of the underserved happen to be people of color still. So I don't know, but this conversation really inspires me. I feel we're going to have a very different audience, both black and white, coming to the Playhouse for this production.
I want to let everyone know the play is Clybourne Park. It's at the Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park from January 18th through February 16th. The community forum is coming up on February 6th, and Dan Hurley will be moderating that. It's from 6 to 8 at the United Way building. Thank you all for being here. It's been a pleasure to talk with you. I've been talking with Clybourne Park director Timothy Douglas, University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Sociology Jeffrey Timberlake, and Walnut Hills Redevelopment Foundation President Catherine Gardette. I'm Marianne Zalesnik.